going to go back to taking the items in order, so we are now on item number one.
From the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee Children's Environmental Health Sciences Corps, Core Center, providing a presentation on lead poisoning prevention.
All right, good morning, ladies. If you could please, for the record, if you could introduce yourselves.
Sure. I'm Dr. Jean Hewitt. I'm a faculty member at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and I direct the Community Outreach and Engagement Corps. And this is
Ruth Schenk, and I'm with the Children's Environmental Health Sciences Corps Center. I'm the Outreach and Engagement Specialist for the center.
Okay. Good morning, and thank you for joining us. Go ahead with your presentation.
Does everybody have a copy of the PowerPoint in front of them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. I'm going to run through the first part sort of fast. It is the science base of why we're interested in this and why we think you should be as well, and then we can focus on the policy implications towards the end. Lead poisoning is the most preventable environmental disease among young children in the United States. It's a highly toxic heavy metal that impairs thinking and learning. It causes behavioral problems and a host of other problems, including delinquency, criminal behavior, low birth weight, et cetera. That affects people across the lifespan. The image of the brain that you see on the third slide on the left shows that a composite of brains that were in a study, about 50 or so that were poisoned by lead, not poisoned by lead, is on the left. So that's a normal brain. That's a backside view of it. On the right is also a composite of about 80 people who, in their young age of three or less, were lead exposed and at levels of 10 micrograms per deciliter and up to, but not including, 20. I'll explain more about what that means in terms of being lead poisoned. So you can see the areas that are colored in there are actually cavities where the brain volume is not there at all. So it's absent, so like holes in the brain, if you want to think about that. I'll talk about that in two slides a little bit more. But on the next slide, you'll see a graph that shows that as lead poisoning increases to the right, and look at the red one, if you would, please. The line has a steep slope going down. That's from 0 to 10 micrograms per deciliter. So from no poisoning to up to the poisoning point that has been used in the past. CDC has now reduced the level of reference level that they call it now to 5 micrograms per deciliter because there are very toxic effects at the lower end of the spectrum. So 5 micrograms per deciliter is considered the actionable level where we should be doing intervention. You can see that as you go from 10 to 20 and 20 to 30 on the red line going to the right, that there is certainly a decrease in the IQ, but that IQ it's less of a slope than it is at the lower end of the spectrum, which is why we are so concerned about lead poisoning all over again, so to speak. Workers' level of concern is also has been reduced at the same time in about 2012 from 20 micrograms per deciliter down to 10 because we're realizing in adult populations it is a very significant problem. And there literally is no safe level of lead. Comparing the brain volume in adults, going back to the meaning of those brain scans, is that the children who were exposed to lead, the average was 13 micrograms per deciliter, not that high, much higher than the actionable level that of 10 micrograms per deciliter. Both boys and girls had very much the same problem, but that, in fact, we only see those lesions to the extent that you saw in the picture in male children. So it's a very big concern in terms of there is a differential impact of lead on children, with boys being much more affected. So there's a decrease also that I showed you a slide of the back of the head, but the front part, the frontal gray matter, which is what we use for executive functions, which help us to plan, to anticipate, to be able to strategize, to be able to pay attention to and remember details. Those kind of functions are greatly diminished as a result of lead poisoning. So that's one of the things that is most affected. It also affects mood regulation and decision-making, which has a huge impact on the population. There was a study done in the Milwaukee Public School Systems with fourth graders, and they went back to their records. So this was all throughout the city, and they went and got blood lead levels on the children as much as they could, traced back. So those children whose blood lead levels at 3 or younger, where they were lead poisoned, were compared to those who were not poisoned. And as you can see from the graph here, that black children were much more likely to have lead poisoning and to a lesser extent Hispanic children. In terms of those who were exposed to lead were much more likely to be using the assisted lunch program, meaning that they were in poverty, absent from school more, suspended from school with out-of-school suspensions much more, 7 times more, and to be in special education, 4 times greater likelihood that they would. They also examined the standardized tests that we use throughout the state of Wisconsin that have 5 components to that. As you can see on the bottom of that graph, children who had been lead poisoned at age 3 in grade 4 were significantly worse off in terms of performance on those tests. So they do much, much worse across the spectrum, reading and language arts, mathematics, and science. So it's something to pay attention to. The primary sources of lead exposure are leaded paint chips and dust in deteriorating housing or other properties, contaminated soil, sometimes due to lead paint, but also our history of having leaded gasoline and industrial emissions, both past and present, water from lead plumbing, and secondhand smoke, which many people do not know that smoking actually has lead in it. So those are important sources of lead exposure. In addition to, for example, imported products that range from toys to mini blinds. There have been children who have been poisoned, causing death, as well as long-term disability as a result of lead poisoning from these items. Well, we're concerned about this because it is so highly toxic to humans, especially during fetal development and in young children. Children under 6 years of age are more susceptible because they have greater exposure. Their stature is such that they're closer to the floor. They're at the level of windowsills. As they get around, normal behavior is hand to mouth. That's how they learn. But unfortunately, the largest exposure comes through ingestion. And so as they touch dust and touch their hand to mouth, that they're likely to ingest it. Also toys that they mouth and so forth. All of those are sources of exposure. They also have a developing nervous system so that it targets the nervous system. That's why the learning and so forth. And there's increased absorption through the stomach and intestines. They 50% of what they ingest will be absorbed into the blood and be toxic to them. You and I as adults will be at 10%. So they're much more efficient at, unfortunately, utilizing that lead in their body. Lead poisoning costs the U.S. over $43 billion annually across the U.S., an estimated $31,000 per child, and that's just for education and the criminal justice systems. It does not include the medical costs, which begin oftentimes with low birth weight babies and go on through their entire adulthood. So the medical costs are substantial as well. Why should you be encouraged to be concerned about lead poisoning? Well, since 1996, more than 46,000 Wisconsin children under 6 years of age have been lead poisoned at the 10 micrograms per deciliter level. You can see the red bar going down, meaning that when we use the 10 micrograms per deciliter as a criterion, yes, we have done better. But the real criterion actually is the 5 micrograms per deciliter that, as of 2 years ago, became the benchmark by which we should be looking at how are we doing. And you can see on the right-hand side where the blue arrow is pointing to that the real problem is much, much worse than what our data would suggest based on 10 micrograms per deciliter. So it is something that we should be very, very concerned about. The map that you see here of the north side of Milwaukee shows at each address where there is a red dot, there's often stacks of red dots, which the two-dimensional picture does not show. But in fact, when you have one child who's lead poisoned in a household, it's very likely that other children are also poisoned there. And subsequently, when people move in and out of that housing, children who are subsequently there, if there is not total remediation, then you will have lead poisoning again. So history repeats itself. The data are older, and that's because when the 5 micrograms per deciliter level was passed by CDC, that's the Centers for Disease Control, they also withdrew all of the money to all of the states, including Wisconsin, and that reduced our capacity to track these issues. Now, the city of Milwaukee still tracks, and they would track no matter what, is what I've been told, but the state is very hampered in its ability to track these children due to budgetary issues. On the next slide, you'll see a very similar pattern on the near south side, where there are many, many children who are lead poisoned throughout the near south side. You'll also see, both on the north side and south side, that there is no place that there aren't lead poisoned children, right? That that the white dots actually mean that it could be anywhere from 0 to up to 9.9 micrograms per deciliter. And if we were using today's standards, we would actually see more children who are lead, far more children who are lead poisoned throughout the city. So it's not just an inner city problem. It is throughout the entire city and county. And, in fact, the state of Wisconsin has problems with lead poisoning as well. So for screening, to find out do we have lead poisoned children, Medicaid actually fully covers and requires screening to be done for children who are 1 and 2 years of age. Yet, in the state, only 1 out of 3 children are actually screened. The city of Milwaukee does a little better than that, is my understanding, but it is still not a good state of affairs. Providers actually receive funding to do the screening. So, mind you, they're getting the money, but they have not performed the service that they should be doing. And that is a disservice, horrible disservice to our children. In primary care, there should be, for the city of Milwaukee and every child throughout the county of Racine, should be automatically screened for lead poisoning. And the rule of thumb is three screenings before age 3. Targeted screening should be done in the remainder of Milwaukee County and elsewhere based on the aging of the housing, as you see here. In terms of what can Wisconsin and Milwaukee County do about lead, estimates suggest that cost savings of $17 to $220 for every dollar spent is cost savings are realized if we reduce the lead hazards. So a cost savings of nearly $28 billion for Wisconsin taxpayers. So it's absolutely essential that we address this issue. We should be exploring effective models for lead prevention and remediation through adequate surveillance, including, I think those maps are extremely important, increased public awareness, consumer warnings on lead products, how many people know when you go buy mini blinds that you may have be bringing lead into your home, promote proactive remediation before children are lead poisoned, dedicate more resources to help property owners fix lead paint hazards in housing. It was 1978 when the law went into effect that we cannot have leaded paint in residential properties. Now, there is lead paint out there, and there's lead in other things, but that's when the rule for the housing. So it's an important date to remember. What can Wisconsin and Milwaukee County do about lead? Well, we can bring state statute into compliance with CDC guidelines. The state statutes still say that we have 10 micrograms per deciliter as the benchmark. We need to change that so that it registers 5 micrograms per deciliter. We need to reinstate report cards. So Medicaid physicians are used to get a report card that included their success rate in terms of screening children. And that it also provided information on the children who were not screened so that they could do more follow-up and get the children in to screen for lead. Because of cost constraints now, we no longer are doing that. When we did have the report cards, it was actually very successful in getting physicians to actually do what they should be doing in the first place. We also need to fund public health screening and interventions. Medicaid reimbursement of local health departments is needed to investigate potential lead hazards in dwellings and provide education for families with children with confirmed blood levels of 5 or higher. And that's who we would now consider to be lead poisoned. We need to identify and remediate sources of lead exposure, including the deteriorating housing stock that we have in the city, contaminated lead soil, and lead-contaminated plumbing. We also need to promote smoke-free environments through policy and practices because of tobacco being a source of lead exposure for children and adults, actually. And then there are some additional policy recommendations that we need to consider. Encourage maintenance of pre-1978 housing stock. So those of us who have newer housing still, but within that time frame, still have to be concerned about having lead there. So maintaining the homes is the way to decrease the dispersion of lead into the environment. Ensure provision of lead-safe housing during remediation, which can be a problem. We've had in the past where literally they can't find a home to or other housing for children who need to have their houses remediated. Ensure lead-safe remediation practices. There are licensed contractors. However, they do not necessarily always follow those rules. And so the public needs to be aware of what should be done and to monitor that they're actually doing it right, and support and fund public information campaigns so that people really understand what lead is about. One of our colleagues who owns a daycare center had asked some of her mothers who come into the daycare, what do you know about lead? And their response was, what is lead? So they have no awareness. So this is right in the heart of the city. They have no awareness of what lead is and what it does, much less how to prevent lead poisoning. And we need to support, obviously, with public funding what we're doing, as well as ensure that public health, including this issue, is in all policies that we make.
Very good. Thank you. Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your report. First, I would like to give a motion to receive and place on file so all my colleagues can see this. But a number of things in your report that how we can bring down from 10 to 5 mm-hmm. is particularly with MPS mm-hmm. of dealing with when they have the screening, they need to be screened for lead also.
But the ideal here is to prevent lead poisoning in the first place. Okay, so actually it starts when a mother is pregnant, right? The mother lead from the mother's body, including if she smokes, but other sources of lead that she's had as a child herself growing up, is actually transferring that to her fetus. So that's when it actually begins. So we don't want people to smoke. We want to reduce adults' lead exposures as much as possible in the homes, and as well as all children. Then by the time they get to the MPS system, it's actually too late for the screening for if you think about first graders. If you think about daycare is one of our target audiences, if you will, because they are taking children and we need to educate both daycare center employees as well as their parents who need to understand what lead is. So we're going to need to start with daycare and churches and other venues so that pregnancy, if not before, and subsequently needs to be taken care of. So MPS is important. Then we need to, how do we teach these children once they have been lead poisoned is another issue that we certainly need to address.
So lead stay within you all your life?
It will stay with you through all your life. You will eliminate some of it, but if you have any re-exposures, that will, so lead is stored in the, primarily in the bones, our long bones, and as our blood level drops, which it will over time, the bone stores actually come out into the blood. So you have this cycle. So what we want to do is prevent our uptake of lead in the first place as much as possible. So it's really an opportunity to think about ourselves as we're passing on to our children what we have, we as women, when we have children. We want to reduce that lead in our environment as much as possible. So it's an environmental issue. We want to tackle the environment, not just the child who's lead poisoned.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Bowen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask about, you mentioned contaminated soil and how common that is throughout Milwaukee County.
Yes. We've done testing. Some pilot studies that have been done out of our center show that both on the north side and the south side, it can be highly variable. EPA's action level for lead in soil is 400 parts per million. We have seen 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 parts per million in the soil. I handed out, or Jody did, a handout in terms of how to safely garden, because we want people to be able to be in the working outside and enjoying the fruits of their labors, if you will, but we don't want them planting in soil, and we don't want children playing in our soil, because we don't know. People are not going to be testing their soil. We do it for research purposes. So we know it's highly variable, and it can be highly contaminated. So there are some methods for working to have elevated beds and so forth so that we can still be outside and enjoy the gardening, for example, but we need to be doing it very safely. We don't want children playing in our urban soil, basically, because we never know, and we have to assume that it's lead contaminated.
So even like fruit trees.
The likelihood, you know, I'm not the right person to answer that, but one of our scientists is. It will go up into plants. It will certainly root vegetables, the leafy vegetables. So if you read that one-page handout, and it's Spanish on one side, English on the other, it has information in terms of like how you can safely deal with. Vegetables and so forth. In trees, it seems less likely because of just the distance that uptake, but I'm not the expert on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further from committees? Supervisor Weishan?
excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things, too, that I think on this, in the remediation part, to train people as, you know, this job creation part that everybody's talking about, where you can get the double benefits of stuff that we have literally thousands, if not tens of thousands of people who are looking for employment and different job opportunities, and where, you know, remediation of this could be a part of that. So I know a lot of people think, oh, it's, you know, a different health issue and just leave it at that, but there's multiple facets in which you can attack this.
Right. So remediation of lead in both housing and soil is likely to actually tackle some other environmental health problems at the same time. For example, while you're remediating a house for lead paint issues, the windows, you're going to have more energy efficiency if you do that correctly. Take care of the roof at the same time, you work at the asthma issue and so forth. So they can be done in a very effective remediation fashion. The city of Milwaukee has had HUD grants to do this, but it's a massive issue in this city and county, and it's something that could be used to train them well and to ensure that our housing becomes much safer.
Right. No, the reason I brought it up was that, you know, sometimes you get these people who are a penny wise and a dollar foolish. They don't want to look beyond the price tag of the training program, and they don't look at the other benefits of and the impact to the community.
Right. The cost savings is substantial. A return on investment of the range I talked about is really very substantial.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. All right. Seeing nothing further, thank you very much, ladies, for being here today.
Thank you.
I'll receive and place on file.
Sorry, do you have a motion to receive and place on file? Madam Clerk, on that motion.
Mayo.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Weishan.
Aye.
Bowen.
Aye.
Taylor.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to receive and place this item on file prevails.
And Madam Chair, they was here so early. They beat everybody to get down here, so they made sure they was ready for this presentation.
Yes. And thank you to Supervisor Haas also for setting this up with us. So we're always looking for good ideas to share information. All right. Item number four.